Good morning. You're listening to WPRK Winter Park, Florida, the best in basement radio, the voice of Rollins College. This is the Sansper Hour. My name is Greg Golden.
And my name's Amir Sade.
Amir, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself, sir?
Oh, I'm doing well.
Anything special this weekend?
Anything special? Oh, just took a trip over to Tampa, had a grand old time.
Nice, nice. What did you do down in Tampa?
Why, this show isn't about us. I visited some folks.
Good.
You?
I just stayed in the area, had some fun with friends and whatnot. Next week I turn 21.
So. That's, yep.
So I'm very excited.
You'll be turning 21, but I'm sure you'll be feeling 22.
You know, Greg, you know the words to say. I'm smitten.
Smitten over here.
We have a lot of things to talk about, folks, today. We have a lot of interesting things. We are definitely wanted to discuss Michio Kaku.
That is correct.
Who is the well-renowned physicist who came to Rollins last Thursday.
Theoretical physicist on actual Rollins campus.
Yes. It was quite an astonishment. Quite
astonishing.
Quite astonishing.
Can't wait to talk about it.
Can't wait to talk about it. Also, we will give you an update on Syria, kind of the situation going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And also, something that just came up right now that we will talk about right after the teletraffic update with Greg Golden.
That's right. We do have an update on the teletraffic. Let's see. Where is our handy-dandy auxiliary cable? Any ideas? Hey, there it is. Fill in the folks on,
Okay. As Greg gets ready with the teletraffic, just been reported, from CNN, MSNBC, very little information's been given right now, but shots have been reportedly fired inside the DC Naval facility. I'm going straight from the CNN report. Shots were fired Monday morning inside the Washington Navy Guard, the U.S. Navy tweeted. The incident occurred at 8:28 a.m. Three shots were fired at the Navy Sea Systems Command headquarters in Southeast Washington, D.C., the tweet says. That's all the information we have so far. I'm checking through MSNBC and other news outlets. That's kind of all the information they have. MSNBC adds that the Navy said on its Twitter feed that there was an active shooter on the yard. But as we hear more information, we'll update you.
Anything on... apprehension of
no
suspect.
I think all these outlets are going off of a tweet that was tweeted by the Navy, saying about what happened. They say that the gunman was on the loose and that the Washington police had taken control of the response. So, from there, we don't necessarily know outside of that. But if we hear anything else within the hour, we'll let you know.
And if you are on the road on I-4 eastbound, there is congestion between John Young Parkway and Amelia Street. If you are westbound, there is congestion approaching Anderson Street to Cayley Avenue. And in Orange County, there is an accident in Lake Pickett Road at Tanner Road. Fire rescue is on the scene. And in Apopka, Keene Road at Marden Road. Your alternative can be McCormick Road, suggested by teletraffic, as there is road blockage. And on the toll roads, westbound 408 Mills Avenue to I-4, there is congestion with right lane only open, and that travel time is reportedly at 7 minutes. So stay tuned at 9:30, we'll be updating you with another report. And now, what is happening across the globe on that other side of the world, that hot button area?
Buttons hot and warm.
Syria.
I mentioned in my article that like a week is a lifetime in international politics, and I feel like this situation has proven that exactly. Within a rapid turn of events, kind of going from the brink of military strike into Syria, we've kind of pulled back. For those who don't know, recently the United States and Syria, with the help of Putin and Russia, have been able to come to an agreement, at least preliminarily, that will have Bashar al-Assad hand over all of its weapons, chemical weapons included, to the international community. What this is, in exchange, the United States has at least somewhat indicated that it won't attack Syria. Although there are those who are saying, such as John Kerry, that that option isn't necessarily off the table. They're waiting to see, though, if this all works out. One of the big things John Kerry had mentioned, of course, Secretary of State John Kerry, had talked about was he was very wary if this deal was going to go through, A, and B, if it was going to be expedited in an efficient manner, so not drawn out over 3, 4, 5 weeks. But at least as of now, it seems to be going on schedule. I'm just reading over this new story. The UN Security Council will be debating the resolution to end Bashar Assad's arms program. The French foreign minister says an international conference to reach a political solution in Syria will include the opposition and will take place at the same time as the UN considers a detailed plan to eradicate Syria's chemical weapons program. So it will be interesting to see as to what happens. John Kerry, again, he's quoted as saying, if Assad fails to comply, we are all agreed, and that includes Russia, that there will be consequences. So, again, a very hot-button issue, a very still heated issue, and it will, again, it will take more time to see what actually happens and if Syria will end up complying and if there will be any punishment beyond the dismantlement of the arms program.
And under that current plan, Syria must submit a comprehensive list of its chemical arsenal within 1 week, and international inspectors must be on the ground no later than November.
Exactly.
So there is a little bit of distance before that actually occurs, but that's the way that the UN has decided to implement this action. And there's still... Well, actually, continuing on that, the inspections of the chemical weapons sites must be completed by November. Oh, wait, it says no later than November. And then in November, it should be completed. And then all the production and mixing and filling equipment must be destroyed. And all chemical weapons material must be eliminated by mid-2014. So this isn't something where by the end of September you'll have people going in and shipping things out and reversing their effects or their production methods and things like that. But the plan is in place, and there is work to be done in the event that Syria doesn't comply and these deadlines are not met. There's still lingering talks about whether or not an attack at that point would be necessary, would be the course of action that the U.S. would take.
And during the president's speech last week, I feel like he, although ended up postponing the vote for Congress to vote on a military strike, certainly made the case for said strike if that indeed needed to be a possibility in the future. And I think that that was very apparent in, out of his 15 minutes speech, he spent the first 7.5-8 minutes talking about why he believed a military strike was important, and then of course added why he's waiting to postpone it. So I think that the president is definitely tried to make a case, and is trying to make a case that, okay, we're going to go through the diplomacy route. That's always the road we want to travel. But if diplomacy doesn't work, please understand why it is important to strike on Syria, even in a limited capacity.
Mm-hmm. And there's even controversy over this sort of timeline, giving Syria that chance to maybe move the weapons out. The Free Syrian Army and their head, General Salim Idris, has said that he has information that Syria has started to move weapons out of the country into Lebanon and Iraq. And Iraq has denied it, calling it cheap propaganda. And so whether or not that's true, that is a fear that they will be able to get help from their neighbors and be able to, you know, be shifting around these weapons that could later be used in some capacity by them or by the countries that are the recipients of them.
Exactly.
And are you privy to the allegations that Iran is supporting the government?
Yes. The way, and I mentioned this in my article, the way that kind of the situation is built up in Syria is it's, none of the sides are perfect. Bashar al-Assad, as people know, is being supported by both Hezbollah and the Iranian government. Hezbollah, of course, leading into Lebanon, and the Iranian government, obviously government of Iran. And that situation makes it difficult because even if Bashar al-Assad is taken away of his chemical weapons, that doesn't necessarily mean he doesn't have troops or other types of aid, other arm aid that these countries can give to him. On the other hand, while many of the rebels are good intentions, there are also factions of Al-Qaeda, Salafi, which are extremist Sunni Muslims, and Muslim Brotherhood that are within the rebel organization as well. So at the same time, while there are very good intentioned rebels fighting against the government, there are also other terrorist elements within those rebels that are trying to take over. And if Bashar Assad does go out of power, we would very likely see a civil war between those factions as to which one would maintain power in Syria. And to have Al-Qaeda gain a new country, you know, some would argue they never really lost Afghanistan, but to potentially gain control of another country with that weapon stockpile, even if chemical weapons are lost, and the resources of Syria, would be a very serious blow to our foreign policy and pretty much to our situation in the Middle East. So the unfortunate thing is that it's such a hotbed issue that there is no right answer. There is no right side. It's very nuanced. And I think that's the scary thing. And really, a best explanatory of what terrorism is in the United, in not only the United States, but in our world, in our global community. There are no sides anymore. There is not the German army, the French army versus the American army or whatever. It is this very mist-like kind of ghost-like figure where you're never really sure where it is or how far it reaches.
And there's like a plurality of these different groups. It's not one that you're trying to consider your dominant enemy. It's a number of groups with varying degrees of violent capabilities.
Of course. The Mujahideen outside of Iran and Iraq is much different than the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. They have they're completely different beliefs. They may have the same name, but completely different ideals. And that's the scary thing, is that you don't really know who you're facing and who you're dealing with anymore.
Mm-hmm. And going back to one idea about Syria, if they are legitimately getting rid of their chemical weapons, and then let's say they do get troop support from Iran, which the BBC is reporting video footage taken by an Iranian general of Iranian forces in Syria. What if, let's say the chemical weapons aren't continued to be used against Syrian people, but excessive force is used through outside troops? How do you think that would change the dynamic of whether or not the U.S. would plan an attack?
The issue, and I know the president would deny it, and he has somewhat denied it, is the concept of the red line. People have gone back to it and have beaten it with a dead horse, but he made this, the reason why people believe, and personally I believe, he's getting very excited about the chemical weapons is because he stated outright that our red line would be the transportation or use of chemical weapons. It's very cliche and it's, you know, a bit morbid, but we don't care if you shoot your people I don't care if we use lead against your people, but once you use chemical weapons, no. That's a big no-no. So, I feel, especially with waning public support and just not really many people wanting us to act, I think that if they were to continue to use excessive force, it'll be the same thing that's happened over the last 2 years, which is unfortunately nothing. It's sad to say, and it's sad to look at it that way, but the reality is we as a country have spent our capital when it comes to going into other countries and helping out. We have the stigma of the world police, and even in situations that matter, some would argue that Syria, as I have, will be the next Rwanda. A slow and silent genocide of people. You know, it's not something that we want to take a part of. And with, unfortunately, Iraq, 10 years, pretty much, almost exactly 10 years in the past, I don't think that even if continued excessive force is going to be used against the people, I don't think we will do anything about it. I think maybe we'll try and bring out a UN resolution. But again, we have Russia's on the Security Council, and they'll probably block anything. So we're just lucky enough that we got something on chemical weapons, to be perfectly frank. And it's an unfortunate situation, but it's a political reality that we have to face.
And now that the focus is very specifically on removing those chemical weapons, it seems that really all of the sort of diplomatic posturing has been solely focused on, if they do not get rid of the chemical weapons, if chemical weapons are still there, it still is simply the physical embodiment of why we would attack and why the international community would get involved.
Yeah.
So, I believe that's our update on Syria.
That is our update on Syria. Yes.
So, I'd say let's hit the music.
Sure.
You got a music for us?
I mean, I always got some music.
Of course you do. All right, and when we return, we will be discussing Michio Kaku, and it appears that Amir is ready to go and hit it. And we're back on the Sands Per Hour.
Yes. So, just before we start talking about Michio Kaku, I just want to kind of update you on the situation that's going on at the Washington Navy Yard. If you haven't heard, if you did not hear at the top of the hour, there has been a few shots fired at the Washington Navy Yard in Washington, D.C. At least one person was injured Monday after a person, I'm sorry, not Washington, D.C., Washington. At least one person was injured Monday after a person fired shots inside the Washington Navy Yard, the U.S. Navy said. An official told CNN's Barbara Starr that several people sustained injuries, according to phone-in reports from the building. The incident occurred at 8:20 a.m., where several shots were fired inside the headquarters of Naval Sea Systems Command in, I was actually right, Southeast Washington, D.C. An active shooter, quote-unquote, remained inside the building, the Navy said. Navy emergency personnel, the FBI, U.S. Capitol Police, and local D.C. police responded to the shooting. Some people are being evacuated and others are being, quote, sheltered in place. The headquarters, the workplace for about 3,000 people, is the largest of the Navy's 5 system commands. So right now that's the situation. It seems that at most one person has been hurt, but again, not much information has come out. But we will continue updating the situation as we hear more and more.
Mm-hmm. And so last Thursday night, Michio Kaku, who is the co-founder of string field theory, he is working to unify Einstein's theories.
Yes.
His unfinished work.
And bring back Einstein's look. He looks very Einsteinium.
Ah, Einsteinium, huh? What's that number, like 123 on the periodic chart?
Really, yeah, it's really far
it's
down.
It's up there. I mean, by up there, I mean down there.
Yeah.
Up there in number.
Close enough.
Yeah. So, you went to it.
excuse me.
You didn't? I did.
I didn't go to it. I heard all about it, though. I had a class at the time, so.
Okay, fair enough.
But, I will ask you, how was it What did you think of it?
It was interesting, and he's certainly a dynamic public speaker. You know, he is on the screen of the TV a fair amount. He's on the Colbert Report. I actually watched one of his clips from that program last night. And he had the goal of telling us what the next 20 years would be like in technology, how it would adapt to our lives. And one of the more profound, perhaps, discussion points was that computers would be like electricity. They'd be everywhere and nowhere. So, see what he means?
Like an omnipresent thing.
Exactly. There we go. That's one word that you just summed up all those words I just said.
Yay!
So, it would be like, you know, you just expect electricity to be in the walls.
Mm-hmm.
You just expect to flip that light switch over there and have it turn on. Why, I could push all these dials off right now. All thanks to electricity.
Electricity. The more you know.
Yeah, and so he predicts that computers will be the same way, where, you know, of course that light switch is connected to the internet. You know, some lights already are where you can be controlling them with your phone or whatnot.
True.
And computers will just be disposable.
No.
You'll have a smart piece of paper that could be sending what you're writing to a computer, and then you just throw it away afterward. You know,
wow.
He compared that to singing birthday cards.
Aw, that's adorable.
And so he said that the technology of a singing birthday card, you name it, Hitler, the U.S. in World War II, they all would have killed for that singing birthday card.
They would have.
Yeah, because of the technology that
has.
Was in there.
You could have given classified codes.
Because that was more computing power than, you know, tenfold than was available back then.
True.
So, in that sort of way, and Moore's Law, where computing power doubles every 18 months.
Not after our own professor, Dr. Moore.
No. This is a...
Okay. Just wanted to clarify.
He probably has some other laws, like turning your homework on time. That's Dr. Moore's Law.
That's Dr. Moore's Law, folks.
Now we're talking about the general Moore's Law.
Yes, Moore's
so,
Law.
So, I would say that, you know, let's say we add up some 18 months stringing in a row, all you math majors out there, you know, then perhaps you can see, oh yeah, in 10 years, you know, a computer like the one is right in front of me could be, yeah, 10, let's say, 6 times as small. You know, or a phone, you know, what goes into this phone right here. And as I'm sure you've already heard these sort of stats, like your phone has more computing power than all of NASA that sent the manned mission to the moon in 1969.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it is crazy.
So, I can send a man to the moon. Well, maybe
yeah,
not.
You could send a winky smiley to space and back to someone. It's like sending a man to the moon.
I saw something quite hilarious, just as a little segue. Neil deGrasse Tyson had posted on his Facebook. I follow him.
Was it Shade?
No, not Shade, but he posted a thing on Facebook. Well, right, I guess it was a Facebook thing. And I'm going to quote, and it made me laugh, if I can find it. Okay, pretty much he said that since if Miley Cyrus's twerking and MMAs had been broadcast on like broadcast television like NBC or ABC,
right.
It would have just now reached like the outer, like I can't say where it was, like the outer parts of like the sun. Like it would have just like now like gone out into like the outer spheres of the sun and area. But because
there's an astrophysicist for you.
But because it was played on cable, it will never reach the outer workings of space. And I was kind of glad that it wasn't shown on broadcast television so that no extraterrestrial life will ever see or judge our society based on Miley Cyrus and the VMAs.
Oh, I thought this was a metaphor for the impact of network versus cable TV. But you're talking about the actual
like sending out into
the
like,
airwaves,
the actual airwaves that it could have been sent out into.
Okay,
it made me smile. I was like, oh. Yeah, I just love the fact that a physicist could just spend the time and like calculate as to how far that would go out.
Yeah, very true. Hey, you know what time it is?
Teletraffic.
All right, so Teletraffic is now reporting congestion approaching Amelia Street, I-4 eastbound. I-4 westbound is reportedly delay-free. On the toll roads, there is no longer a delay going westbound. And let's look at Orange County at Keene Road and Martin Road. Fire rescue is on the scene with road blockage due to an accident. An alternative may be McCormick Road. And in Seminole County, at eastbound State Road 46 at Wekiva River Road, all lanes are blocked due to an accident. Fire rescue is on the scene. So please be safe out there. And that is our last traffic update for the day.
Which means there won't be any traffic anymore, right, Greg?
I'm not sure if that's what that means.
Darn.
No more traffic reports.
Okay.
But, one follows the other, or something like that.
That's what I call a correlation and causation fallacy.
All right, I'll ask you about that never. So
the only people who care are my psychology professors. Shout out to Dr. Queen and Dr. Davidson.
Nice. So, going back to Mr. Keiku.
Keiku!
Yeah.
Yes.
So, he had some other startling discoveries. They weren't that startling. What was startling was the fact that his PowerPoint was from circa 1999.
Oh, because, and just by the by, if you don't realize, the man hasn't published anything since, like, the 90s. Like, he is not...
Oh, those books that are, like, paraded around aren't
But he
recent?
Hasn't done any... He hasn't done any research since... Like, he's not an active physicist. Like, there's some people like Neil deGrasse Tyson who go out and say, like, look, I'm not, like... I haven't done, you know, like, I'm active in the science community, but I haven't done, like, full-on research back in the day because I'm not a scholar anymore. Like, now I can do the lecture circuit and I can just talk about what we know.
Yeah.
Keiku acts as if he's, like, been doing this. He's on the ground. He hasn't been on the ground since the 90s. So it's been, so it makes sense to say that his PowerPoint is outdated.
Comically so.
I heard it broke down twice.
It did. Unfortunately.
Which is ironic, isn't it? Like, talking about the technology of the future as his slides, like, malfunction.
So he put a video on towards the end of his speech, or at least tried to. So it started playing, and there was no sound, and at this point, people started getting up and leaving.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I heard, and this is from an unconfirmed source, that the physics department kind of gave shade to the presentation a little.
Shade, huh?
A little bit of shade.
Yeah.
Which I understand.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. I'm going to just say allegedly. But I heard it wasn't the,
Well.
It wasn't what it is expected. And especially that situations like that don't help. But
given your comment on irony, I'll toss you a little nugget of what I had to say when the video didn't have sound. I was like,
oh, God.
In the future, videos will have sound. but he went on to talk
about... Take you down a peg, Michio Keiku. What?
Yeah. So, some of this stuff was just like, doesn't that stuff already exist in some ways? Because, like, he was showing these slides of, really, they had to be early 2000s at the latest. And it was, like, people with these, like, big tablet computers that they were writing on. It was like, actually, normal-looking tablet computers exist.
I think they're actually called tablets, sir.
Right.
I'm pretty sure last time that they actually have devices called tablets.
Yeah, so, you know, there were certainly some earlier PowerPoint default fonts used, I will say, that also may have tipped off his,
the
version
age.
That it was made in.
The age of his,
But... you could tell that a lot of people were very interested in what he was saying. He had also gone to talk about just other ways in which the medical field will be more dynamic in the future. He seemed to express positively the chance of there being sort of a Star Trek-like sort of device, like a phone that you could just scan over someone's body and see if they have an illness.
That'd be fun.
Which exists in different ways already. Not to that scale, but, you know, like...
I was about to be like, an X-ray machine, Greg? Are you really...
Well,
X-ray?
No, come on. No. But he was saying, like, you could get MRI-type imagery from a tiny device and stuff like that.
Okay.
So, yeah, he focused on medicine. He also dipped into financial ties with...
Was he talking about, what did he talk about, financial?
Well, he talked about how every major economic boom, I mean, not boom, well, boom and crash could be tied to a specific technological advancement.
Okay.
So...
I can see that, I can see that.
Yeah, and of course, these booms that bring unprecedented wealth to an area, unprecedented, you know, end up creating unsustainable lifestyles, and eventually when the profits aren't as, you know, as high as they originally were, there's a crash.
Well, I mean, infamously known as the tech bubble bursting in the 2000s.
Tech bubble. That's a great one. And so he also tried sort of tying in the housing bubble, which didn't make sense. He was like, oh, 2008, it was the digital bubble and housing. And just like,
I love how, see, but again, it's like, and housing, and microwave.
Yeah.
And that's why we need.
If only technology hadn't brought us these, subatomic prime mortgages.
Those super houses, those technologically advanced houses that, no.
No, but,
no, sir.
But then I did bring it to a Crummer graduate who I, spent some time with the day after, and who actually was sitting by me the day before.
Coolio.
At the event.
Yes.
Not Coolio.
Oh, no.
No, it was not the Sir Coolio. No, I don't think he went to Crummer either.
That they went to Crummer, but anyways,
just one guy.
Sorry.
So what happened was I had brought up to him, you know, what do you think of when he brought up the housing bubble when he was talking about technology causing these bubbles bursting? And he was like, well, all the people that had money started buying houses. Maybe so. I mean, what I had said in subprime mortgages and...
In the sense that, if you look at it as people were overconfident about a market...
Okay, there we go.
And bought up all the assets within a market thinking that it would elevate... As opposed to depreciate. Okay, you can call it a bubble, but I'll let you continue.
Yeah, but at best, I think there's a tangential link, you know, not very strong to technology in 2008.
No.
But
technology advanced, which is why it seemed to... The thing is, technology seemed to... was going to keep on getting better. And in a way, if you look at housing... was seen to potentially keep on being cheaper and the investments still being solid. When people realized that both were shaky at best, I think the difference is one was a complete falsehood with subprime mortgages and lies and deceit. The other just, we overestimated how important technology would be. So tangential link, I agree, but I don't know how strong I would take that.
You know what else KQ made a joke about?
What?
Other outdated Microsoft technology.
Like what?
You remember that joke we would say in like middle school where it'd be like, hey, you know what an oxymoron is? Microsoft works. He threw that one out there, bro.
Nice.
A product that no longer exists.
No longer exists and most kids don't even know about.
Yeah, but, you know, jokes aside, he did liven up his performance with a number of tales that were, flitting to the ear, What does that mean?
Flitting.
Go
on. Were they saucy? Were they saundry? What was the...
Why, is that what that means?
I guess
I shouldn't use words I don't know.
I know, it just, it seemed like they were scandalous.
No,
I like,
it was...
Some stories that were...
Pleasing. Pleasing to the ear.
Okay.
You know.
That's nice.
Produce some giggles.
Producing giggles. Okay, well,
the giggle
I
producer.
Like that. I like the giggle producer.
Yeah.
It's a new...
Coming to you.
It's a new form of technology coming in 10 years. The giggle producer.
I was thinking it would be some sort of a winter holiday classic.
Oh, I thought it was like a subatomic particle machine. But like,
giggle producer. Oh, okay.
Like a just makes you giggle by like rearranging
a,
your
a
atoms.
A giggleplex.
Like a giggleplex.
Like a Googleplex.
Yes.
Yeah, whatever. So, any other queries about this Keiku performance?
I guess overall, yay, nay. Neil deGrasse Tyson should have come. What do you think? How did you feel? I guess overall, and maybe what did you think the sense was of the room? If you could take a sense of the room,
I'll take a sense of the room. Overall, sure, I'm glad I went. I enjoy all of the Winter Park Institute events that I've attended. It would be on the lower half of that spectrum of speakers. However, I think that his speech was unfortunately a little bit dated. And I think the reception really wasn't there. As I mentioned, the couple times where his computer needed to be fixed, people were talking. And it was, I'm sure it was only about a minute and a half, but of course it felt so much longer. And after that, you know, towards the end, as I said, people started walking out when his video wasn't working. Walking right out. Big, not a huge movement, but, I mean, when you can notice it, and there's people coming from, you know, a lot of different parts of the room.
It's something.
It's noticeable. And then they hadn't announced beforehand that he would be taking questions, and so as soon as his presentation was over, just about everyone got up, and their President Duncan had said, oh, we'll be doing question and answer, and a lot of the people who had gotten up decide to stay up.
Yeah.
And so that sort of gave the Q&A a little bit of a hurried sort of
feel
to it. I think people were still sort of standing, just like, okay, how many questions in am I going to wait, you know, before I head out?
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
That's unfortunate.
Unfortunately, that was the case. And I had thought a little bit, it's almost a little bit good that Neil deGrasse Tyson didn't come and experience, you know, any technical difficulties that might have hindered his speech.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that would have been a bigger, bigger deal if that had happened to Mr. Tyson. Or,
but do you think that was on the fault of Rollins Tech, or do you think it was potentially just Michio Keiku having an old blank?
It was not his presentation.
Okay.
Like, he was on a MacBook. He wasn't on, you know,
his
computer itself,
like,
wasn't from 1999.
That's what I was thinking. It's just, you know, like this derelict, like, that's fine. I have a Gateway from 2002. I don't need a...
that needed, like, three different plugs to adapt to
modems
the correct...
To the correct
one to hook up to the screen. But no, and like the DVD that was supposed to be shown at the end was not from his laptop. That
Darn.
Was from the system.
Oh,
so,
well, you know what? Que sera, sera, what will be, we have a new person coming October 2nd.
New person.
Arun Gandhi.
Yes.
The grandson.
I thought you meant a new, like,
no.
New announcement. But yes,
no.
Arun Gandhi.
Arun Gandhi will be coming. The name of the talk is Lessons Learned from My Grandfather, Nonviolence in a Violent World. I think this will be quite interesting to see. I think I will definitely try and make it out to this one. It'll be on, again, October 2nd, a Wednesday. Change of day, as per the usual. 7 p.m. in the Nose Memorial Chapel. He will be talking about the lesson and legacy of his father. And it will be Arun Gandhi quoting from the website, carries within himself the same guiding principles as his grandfather, the legendary peacemaker and spiritual leader, Mohandas K. Gandhi. So it'll be very interesting to see what he has to say. Again, talking about his father's legacy.
Grandfather.
Thank you. Grandfather's legacy.
And I think it's on his birthday.
Really?
Gandhi's birthday.
Let me see Gandhi's birthday.
Let you see Gandhi's birthday.
Yeah, but no, it'll be very, very interesting. Actually, is it on his birthday? October 2nd. Yes, if that is what I said. Yes, it is on Gandhi's birthday. Wow, that's kind of interesting how that kind of works out. But yes, so it'll be very interesting to have, you know, somebody talk about, I mean, one of the greatest, advocates of nonviolence since Thoreau. I mean, he pretty much revolutionized nonviolent activism, inspired Martin Luther King, and it'll be very interesting to see what, I guess, having that personal connection with his grandfather, and see what insight he has on this famous leader of nonviolence.
Sure, and they're bringing in people who are the relatives of, you know, noteworthy individuals, as in 2 years ago, no, that was last year, with Martin Luther King III, and then later this year with Jackie Robinson's daughter. So certainly bringing in people who know so well these famous figures and bringing their message to the present day in the way in which they can. So, did that jive with what you just said while I was answering that phone call?
Pretty much. Pretty much.
All right, perfect.
Was it an interesting call?
Yeah, it was interesting.
Okay.
It was just another DJ.
Yay, DJs. We love DJs here at WPRK.
We do. We spin the music now and again.
Now and again, from time to time.
Why, let's spin another music right
now. Let's do it.
All right, see you on the other side. And that was What Is My Life, or What Is Life, by George Harrison.
Very cool. And the song that you listened to before that was Cold as Ice by Foreigner.
That's right. The song you heard in the middle was Keep Me Hanging On by The Supremes.
Yay!
Our traffic music.
So, yeah. So Greg, what do we have to look forward to for next week? Or actually, this Thursday. What do we have to look for articles?
This Thursday for articles, we have what may be the last submitted piece from a series that was intermittent from one of our previous writers, Ben Zeitzman.
Oh.
He previously wrote about addictions to Adderall.
Okay.
And then he wrote Dispatches from Suspension as he was suspended from Rollins last semester.
Okay.
And then his last piece is entitled Paradise.
Oh.
I have not seen it yet.
Very interested to read it.
But coinciding with that is a cover design contest that our own David Madison, our production manager, is visiting a graphic design class on campus right now.
Ooh.
To determine which cover will be our cover.
David Madison!
They are producing, you know, however big the class is, one per person.
Very cool.
And their work will be on 1,000 issues of the Sanspur.
1,000, folks. That's more than 999.
At least by one.
At least.
And it will, you know, be on campuses this Thursday. On campuses. On stands across campus this Thursday. And we will be putting all the covers up on thesanspur.org. We will try to share their work in every way we can. And looking forward to seeing who that winner is.
I'm looking forward to seeing it as well.
I don't know if you hear this at home, folks. My hands rubbing together in anticipation.
I thought it was because our studio is really, really cold.
Is that why you played Cold as Ice?
Yes. I think subconsciously I did.
That was like a subtle cry for help.
Can we turn on the heater? Sorry. That's why they don't pay me the big bucks to sing, folks.
So that's why you didn't play Hot Blooded.
And with that, I leave the studio.
All right.
See you, folks.
Amir leaves in disgust. not for the first time, not for the last time. But he's headed to class, and I will see him later. Why will I see him later? Oh, why? Because the Sandspur is having their article assignment meeting weekly on the fifth floor of the Mills building on Rollins campus, which all students, faculty, and staff, undergrad, grad, MBA, you name it, you are invited to join us and find out how you can get involved with the Sandspur. What are some of these ways you can get involved with the Sandspur, you ask? Why, as a writer, as a freelance writer, you can attend our meetings and suggest any articles that you would like to cover. You can select an article that our editors have offered for writing. You can inquire about becoming a member of our team in a number of different ways. We are looking for work-study assistants. If you are eligible for work-study, you may apply to become a production assistant who is around during our layout nights when we are putting our paper together and producing that work that you see on stands Thursday morning. So you'd be helping out with photography, with interviews, and in all these other little ways that help us do what we do. We are also looking for things like, if you would like to deliver the paper across campus, that is an area in which you can help us. And I mentioned photography as something a production assistant could do, or you could just become a photographer and take photos around our campus of events and different things. Get your work published. That's one of the biggest things that we can offer right now, is giving you some clippings if your work is good enough to help you in your job search later. If you can go into an interview and give them an article that you've written, clipped out from one of our issues, that'd be a pretty good thing to do. And we are also looking for people to review music, people to review local restaurants and culture around the area. And so let's say you consume local arts or local culture or local foods and drinks. Those would be wonderful ways to get involved, because we do consider it a service to our readers to inform them about different opportunities around our community to enjoy themselves and let them know that they should be going, or offering them information that could help them decide whether or not they should go to one place or another. And let's see, what else is going around in Sandspur Land? If you noticed our last issue, a pretty popular one, as I can tell by the amount of pickups that have been picked up. Papers that have been picked up off stands. You can read about what Are You Afraid of Lake Virginia? There's a lovely looking sea monster on the front cover, and that inside story talks about whether or not it is wise to take a dip in our fair lake. It also talks about the history of this lake that at one point, believe it or not, was reportedly crystal clear. You could see to the bottom of it. But since then, different agreements with the city of Winter Park that have allowed different sorts of runoff to enter the lake have made it a lovely looking dark blue, but perhaps not as striking as that alleged crystal clear bottom might have been. And hey, it looks like we will, by we I mean me, be with you for another little bit as DJ Apple Kobler tries to make it back to the studio. And so this is the Sandspur Hour signing off. We will be back next Monday, 9 to 10 a.m., back with Amir Sadeh. So for him and myself, Greg Golden, wish you a good Monday. Goodbye.